his left. Tough shot. Made it. End of the line.
Bad pass. Tipped away and Indiana's got it. Up the floor to Oladipo. He will lay up. Score! Jones. Watford for the win. Yes!
It's Indiana. It's Indiana.
Welcome back, everyone, to another edition of Podcast on the Brink. Greg Rosenstein here. As always, I'm joined by Matt Dollinger. We got a big show for you today. We're going to go over last night's pretty dominant 83-59 win against UNC. We have Eamon Brennan of ESPN.com on the show to talk about the game. Matt, how's it going on your end?
It's going well. Still basking in the glow of last night's performance. Just an incredible night for the Hoosiers. They really just stuck it to the Tar Heels midway through the first half and didn't let off the gas the rest of the way. I guess we should kind of expect that performance out of the number one team in the country, but it's been a while since the Hoosiers have played like that, and sure wish I was at Assembly Hall last night.
Yeah, it was a great, great game to watch. I actually watched at the DCIU Alumni Bar Union Pub. It was rocking. There were probably at least 100 people there. No open seats, everyone getting into it. Probably the next best thing I could have had outside of Assembly Hall at this point. But yeah, great game. What kind of stood out to you when you were watching it?
Well, I mean, right off the bat, I mean, Cody Zeller was incredible running the floor last night. I think that's what definitely stood out in the first 3 minutes. He had 7 quick points, and, you know, it was really interesting to see Crean's strategy of, you know, kind of not having Cody crash the glass and instead get down court. And Hulls did a great job of hitting him on those outlet passes, and yeah, it connected with Oladipo on a few too. But you know, it was clear that IU had decided that they were going to try and outrun the Tar Heels, and they did just that, which is pretty impressive considering that the Tar Heels are a really athletic team, and you know, not too many other teams in the country would even consider doing that.
Yeah, it was. They were running all game. The transition offense was pretty incredible. And I think you look at Hulls, everyone talks about Hulls being, you know, the sharpshooter that he is, which is true. But, you know, his passing is really has really been great this year. I mean, I didn't even notice it as much in the last couple of years. But I mean, some of the ways he was able to find players down low, especially Zeller, I'm picturing one right now where he threw it all the way up court for a Zeller dunk. He has been great. And, you know, you look at Yogi. I mean, he and Yogi have been playing great together, too. And Yogi's not necessarily putting up the numbers, but he's finding guys open. I'm thinking of one right now where he drove the lane, dished the last second to the corner to Hulls for three. I mean, those two together have been really good.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, I was on Twitter last night, and I kind of joked that Hulls was reminding me of Pistol Pete with his, you know, the flop top hair on top and the way he was diving into the lane and, you know, throwing passes back out, especially that one pass to Hollowell where he hit the three. I said he kind of looked like Pistol Pete, and his brother Jay responded a few hours later and said, that's why he's growing out his hair. That's his favorite player. So,
nice.
Yeah, you know, the evolution of Jordy has just been something else this year. He's really taken the Hoosiers to another level. We talked about this last week, how, you know, Yogi's ability as a playmaker is really taking pressure off him. But it's just incredible to see how much, you know, Hulls has improved in every facet of the game. I mean, we all know his shooting, and we can't talk enough about it. It's incredible how accurate he is from down there. But, you know, now he's really seeing the floor, and now he's, you know, when he's got three or four other options on the floor, he's getting the ball to the right guys, and that's really making IU's offense click.
Yeah, agreed. And I saw in Alex's notebook today, he had a stat that said, you know, Hulls has 31 assists to only 5 turnovers. I mean, on top of that, he's making the smart pass every time. So, I mean, that's really good to see, especially with Yogi in the backcourt. And then the other two guys that I thought were great last night, Oladipo and Sheehy, you know, on the offensive end, but especially on the defensive end, they kind of locked down Bullock, and you saw Sheehy go against McAdoo in the second half. He was really good. I mean, he gave up a couple inches there, but he was really pesky, not allowing McAdoo to do much on the inside. So, those two guys I thought were also equally impressive.
Yeah, I think we talked about McAdoo at length last week on who would guard him. I think we talked about everybody on the Hoosiers except for Sheehy. So yeah. Maybe we shouldn't be writing any defensive game plans for the Hoosiers. But yeah, Sheehy did a great job on him and, you know, put up his second straight 19-point effort, barely missed, you know, had great accuracy from the floor. Oladipo was all over the place. It really was a banner night for everybody on IU's team, with the exception of Christian Watford, who just couldn't seem to get it going, finished 1-9 from the floor. And we were talking about it on Twitter last night. It was just, you know, forcing up opportunity. Every time he got the ball, he was forcing up a shot. You know, he just wanted, you know, to contribute so bad and to be a part of this, you know, great performance from IU. It just so happened it was an off night for him, and you could tell he really, really wanted to do something last night.
I know, it's pretty crazy just to show how deep this team is that you maybe have your second best player, arguably, have one of the worst nights of his career, and they still beat UNC by 30 points. I mean, this team is so balanced, so deep. It's pretty incredible that, you know, even without Watford, they were able to kind of have a beatdown like last night.
You know, it's all about him accepting the fact that he's a role player on this team, and it has nothing to do with his ability and just everything to do with the Hoosiers. You know, I'm convinced he's a better player than he is today than he was last year at this time. There's no doubt about that, but his teammates are different, you know, and now his most valuable, you know, assets to the Hoosiers are his rebounding and his ability as a defender, and, you know, his three-point shot is a bonus now. It's not his primary weapon. So, you know, I think it's going to take a little time to get used to that, but I still think he can be, you know, a really important part of this team, just kind of in a different role.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Just the only thing is you don't know what you're going to get every night. I mean,
no.
I don't know. You might not get the support of these other players as much as you did last night, so you're gonna need him to step up in some of these games. I'm just worried that, you know, they're going to need him, and he's not going to be there. That's the problem. He's not consistent enough, maybe like, say, Zeller or Holes is. So, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how that consistency goes as we kind of go further down into the season.
And that's always been the problem with Christian. He's always had the talent. Just always been a question of consistency. I mean, it's the same thing when you talk about Jordan Holes and being short. You know, he's always going to be short. There's always going to be a question on whether he can guard bigger guards. And for Watford, unfortunately, I think the question's always going to be, can he put up the type of production we know he's capable of putting up every night? And, you know, obviously Christian has considered going to the NBA last year, obviously wants to make it next year, and that's what he's got to prove to everybody. It's not can he do this or can he do that. They like what he can do. It's can he do it on a regular basis, and that's not easy. And, you know, he showed last night he still has those off nights where he just – disappears or really struggles. And you know, we're nitpicking because IU won by 30 last night and beat the number 12 team in the country, but if there was one, you know, kind of unfortunate storyline last night, it was Watford's struggles.
Yeah, well, let's talk to Eamon. I'm curious to see what he has to say about Watford and kind of IU overall big picture.
Yeah, sounds good. Let's take a short break, and when we're back, we'll be joined by Inside the Hall pioneer and ESPN blogger Eamon Brennan. All right, everybody. We are now joined by ESPN blogger and good friend Eamon Brennan, who's battling the flu a little bit like Cody Zeller last week, but is still joining us today. What's going on, Eamon?
Hey, how's it going, fellas?
Good, good. We're happy to have you and happy to have you on the program today. You know, obviously, the big story is IU's huge win over North Carolina last night. We know you watched and would love to hear your impressions on the game and kind of, you know, what stood out to you about the Hoosiers' dominant win?
Yeah, well, first of all, I'd like to apologize to the listeners of the podcast here for sounding like one of Marge's sisters, but I've been battling the flu. I also apologize if my impressions of the game were affected by, you know, delirious fever dreams I was going through yesterday. Things got really weird in the afternoon. Like, I woke up at like 3 o'clock. Like, whoa. I can't believe, I don't want to go into detail, but I was just like, whoa, that was bad. So anyway, no, obviously, Indiana's really good at basketball. They're really good at scoring the basketball particularly. And I sort of said coming in that, you know, I didn't think it was going to be like a 30-point blowout, but I said coming in, I did a radio thing in Louisville with Jason Anderson and I had to do predictions on the site. And I said coming in that it's just impossible for me to watch them. You know, I watched them play against Butler when it happened, and then I went back and looked at it later after the fact too, and they just didn't guard anybody against Butler. Not only did North Carolina have no sort of plan B on offense, like if you take them out of what they want to do, which is get up on the break, penetrate, and then post with James Michael McAdoo, if you take them out of that, which Brad Stevens did within like the first 2 minutes, then they have no plan B. They're not there yet. And defensively, they didn't guard everybody. And I said that looks like a really bad recipe when you're going to play in Assembly Hall, first and foremost, against the number one ranked offense in the country. And I thought it was a recipe for a blowout, and it was. It really wasn't that surprising. I thought it was, maybe a little bit surprising as to the extent of how much North Carolina failed to score, especially when the game got going up and down. I thought that was a credit to Indiana's defensive intensity, in the middle of the second half when it would have been easy to probably just trade buckets the rest of the way. I think they really put the pedal to the metal. And, what can you say? It's a comprehensive sort of A-plus performance from a team that is really, really good and that is, still, the favorite to win the national title, or at least one of them. And there's not a whole lot else you can say about it.
Now, this was a relatively close game, until there was 3-4 minutes in the first half left. And then to start the second half, IU went on a 22-4 run. Is there anything in particular you saw at the end of that first half, early part of that second half, that stands out to you as to why Indiana was able to kind of push the momentum, push the lead like that?
Yeah, well, they started getting better stops. Will Sheehy started fronting in the post, I know, in the second half a lot more. And I thought they just in general ratcheted up the defensive intensity a little bit. During that first, 10-15 minutes, I thought North Carolina kind of could do what it wanted to do on offense, which is post James Michael McAdoo, let him sort of turn around and hit that 10-footer. I mean, he's still figuring out how to score with his back to the basket, which is kind of counter to what everyone said about him, like recruiting analysts said about him coming in last year, is that he came with sort of a ready-made, like, fundamental post game, and he really is still struggling to figure that out. I mean, he prefers to shoot that 10-foot jumper all the time, and they were getting a lot of that, and Bryce Johnson had a nice little start and some solid post moves, and Marcus Page was getting into the lane. He's pretty deadly with that little left-handed floater, and North Carolina was rebounding the basketball. I mean, that's one thing that Indiana right now, especially without Hunter Perrin and Peter Jerkin, are going to have to deal with, is the fact that, they've got some size. Like, Cody Zeller is obviously a big athletic guy, but they're not super athletic along the front line. Like, Christian Watford is basically a small forward who is an okay rebounder, but doesn't bring that sort of rebounding intensity on a nightly basis. And that's been an issue with him throughout his career. And he's always sort of, even when he was as a freshman sophomore playing power, playing basically power forward and posting up all the time, you could tell he'd much rather just be out on the perimeter hunting threes.
Yeah.
So I think without those guys, and depending on how effective they are when they come back, that's going to be an issue for Indiana playing against teams that are really athletic at multiple positions along the front line and that have guards that are big and athletic. Because Jordan Hall's, love the kid, great player, especially on offense. Love Yogi Ferrell, he's going to be fantastic, already is fantastic as far as I'm concerned. Will Sheehy and Victor Oladipo can guard people, but those, if you have Jordan Hall's and Yogi in the game at the same time, you're playing a team with big guards, it'd be really tough to stay in front of them on a consistent basis. So Indiana's going to have some trouble with teams that are athletic like that. They make you out rebounded by teams that really crash the glass, a team like Michigan State, for example. But, they're so good on the offensive end that they're usually going to be able to make up for it. And I do think when Perrin and Jerkin get back, that'll alleviate some of that. So that was, I think that was a lot of why North Carolina sort of was able to keep pace. And they're rebounding well. They're getting into the middle of the lane. They were getting James Michael McAdoo off. But even as it was happening, I was sort of saying in the chat that we were running on ESPN, like, Indiana's going to make a run. And it started in the first half, and I didn't think it was going to explode like it did in the second half. But it was only a matter of time. Like, they're going to put a bunch of points on the board on you in a hurry.
I kind of thought it was interesting. We mentioned this earlier about how Crean was kind of having Zeller punt rebounds and, just have the other four guys crash the glass and have him sprint down the floor. And, it really worked well. And later on, Hulls hit Oladipo on a few of those passes too. So, that might be another reason why IU struggled on the boards a little bit. It just seemed like Zeller's job was to get down the floor as quickly as possible. And, it was really working against the Tar Heels. They were caught sleeping a couple of times. Eamon, there's so many positive things to talk about from last night's game. But one thing I think a lot of IU fans are talking about right now is Christian Watford and how, he struggled last night. And I just kind of want to get your impressions on what you think, Watford's role should be on this team and what, IU really needs him to do in contrast to his role last season?
Well, you know, I mean, this team isn't complete until Jerickson and Pereira come back. I don't want to harp on that too much, but I do think those guys are going to be kind of the secondary rebounder guys behind Zeller. So, and look, the guards rebound well too. Like Will Sheehy and Victor both go get after the glass. So I just think Christian Watford, to me, when you're talking about his struggles, like guys have bad shooting nights, it's fine. I think to me, the biggest thing for him is he needs to understand that he's more than just like a set spot shooter. You know, it's real easy to sort of float around the 3-point line and keep your hand up and hunt threes like on offensive rebounds. But there are a lot of guys that can do that. I can do that. I do it all the time in rec league basketball. I'm lazy. I just say, hey, I'm open, and I try to make shots. Like, you know, I mean, his first bucket of the night last night was the first time he seemed, you know, sort of awake. And he went to the rim and dunked on somebody's head. And it's just
it was
like,
beautiful.
Yeah, so it's like, dude, you know, if your shot's not falling, get to the rim. Get a post, you know, and obviously he's not running offense for himself, but like get a post, turn around and try and get a quick jumper on the post. Like he has that game. I remember from his freshman sophomore year, I remember when he was a freshman being shocked at how well he had that sort of 5 to 10 foot turnaround jumper already as a freshman. Most guys don't have that. I haven't seen him use that shot in forever because he's become such a 3-point threat. And when he's on, he's great. He's 6'8" guy who strokes three. That's fantastic. But you want him to be sort of a secondary or third rebounder when those guys come back. You want him to still hunt his shots and be open along the perimeter and look for that three. But you also want him to, you know, be a little bit more versatile, be willing to put the ball on the floor, put it in, take it, you know, the famous Bob Knight head fake, dribble, pull up, or take it all the way to the glass. Like, something good's going to happen. If you attack the glass aggressively or a 6'8 guy, you know, he's not going to jump out of the gym, but he's got a lot of talent there. And I think he just settles too frequently for just trying to hit shots. And he's got a lot more game than that.
I agree. And I think also when you watched him last night, you know, when his shot wasn't falling a little bit, I think he was more at least open to passing. I know he had a couple good passes to Sheehy, who had a three. I mean, Watford at least knows his role on this team, which is good. I just hope, you know, the consistent effort is there every night. Eamon, I'm curious to just get your take on the backcourt right now. There's a lot of questions on that being such a small backcourt with Yogi and Jordan at the same time. I know they've shuffled guys in and out, whether it be Remy or Mo, with either one of those guys. But at this point, I mean, do you think this backcourt, you know, can hold up for the rest of the year?
Yeah, you know, I think it can. I mean, sure. I think so. I think they've got a lot of depth in the backcourt, actually. Like, I really like that Jordan-Yogi combination just because I love having Hulls off the ball whenever possible. I mean, he's great, you know, pull-up dribble, 15-foot jump shot. He can hit shots off the dribble. That's not a problem. But I love just sort of having him stretch the floor. But like, you can't leave him. So that's just going to open things up for Zeller and for, you know, Yogi, for guys putting the ball on the floor and penetrating. So I love having them on the floor at the same time. But it is a bit of a defensive liability, just because they are both so, I mean, are they both listed at 6 foot? I think it's like
6 foot, 5'10" or something.
They both get the gentleman's 6 foot probably, but let's be honest about it. So
if they're 6 foot, Greg is 5'5", definitely.
Jerks.
Yeah.
So look, I mean, it is a bit of a defensive liability, and that's the one area where we know Indiana has to make the most improvement if they want to win a national title. But I think, you know, I think Coach Green's done a pretty good job I mean, I talked about it a little bit last night on Twitter and everyone got really mad at me, but for as much as I think he's maybe kept starters in too late into some of their bigger blowouts, I think he's done a really nice job managing minutes and managing the rotations to the point where it never feels like he's got sort of a truly wacky set of five in there, unless it's, you know, clearly a blowout and it's in the final couple minutes. I mean, I talked about it. I would prefer to see him go to the end of the bench early in games, like against Ball State. And because I was just sitting here working like on Sunday night and my roommate was watching the game and I just put my head up and they were up by like 50 points. I'm just like, why is Christian Watford still in the game? You know, like, I could get it last night because he was struggling, but it's just like, oh, it terrifies me. It just makes me, and like, people last night thought, you know, I don't know. It's people on Twitter. First of all, they don't know that, like, I went to Indiana. So, like, calling me, like, a Purdue homer is just stupid. And some guy wrote, like, some guy told me that STFU because no one likes you, even people from your home state. And I wanted to retweet and be like, Iowa?
Iowa?
But, you know, it's just one of those things where, like, people thought I was, like, you know, accusing him of, like, running up the score, which is not the case at all. I don't care about that one bit. Like, this isn't T-ball, you know? Like, it's North Carolina. Like, they can deal with it. The point is, like, I am a Bulls fan, and I watched Derrick Rose get hurt and potentially ruin his career for no good reason. Like,
yeah.
It makes me skittish, you know?
Yeah, I'm the same way. I saw you did take some flack for that last night, but I should have came to your defense because you're right. There's no point in those guys being in the game that late in it. And, you know, look in the NFL, Rob Gronkowski, you know, broke his forearm the other day on an extra point when the Patriots were up 30. You know, those things happen. And injuries are going to happen no matter what. But when they happen like that, you just kick yourself. And,
people are writing back like, oh, well, I guess they shouldn't practice that. And, like, it's, I know. I mean, I get it. But it's just like, it's one of those things where, like, why open yourself up to that? You know, I don't really know that as well, you know, as humming as this team is right now, that, like, you can control a lot of that stuff in practice. Games, you can't always control it. And late in games, late in blowouts, weird things happen. It's just sort of like, you know, the chances of it happening are low, but, like, why open your, if I'm a coach, I'm, like, not even opening myself up to that criticism, like,
right,
the potential that it could happen, or even the risk. I just, maybe it's an irrational sort of outsider's perspective, but it's not even just about Indiana either. It's about any, like, if it was totally reversed last night and North Carolina had James Michael McAdoo in with 5 minutes left, or, you know, whatever, 6 minutes left, and they were up 30, I'd be like, dude, Roy, what are you thinking? You know,
do you think there's any kind of rivalry brewing at all, at least between Crane and Roy Williams? I know they go after a lot of the same guys, and he's actually now taken a few of the same guys, a few of the guys that Roy's wanted. Do you think that had anything to do with it, maybe sticking it to him a little bit?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean,
I'm just thinking out loud here. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, at this level, like, a lot of guys are recruiting the same guys, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, theoretically, like, Kentucky and North Carolina have a rivalry that's in that way, and so does Kansas and North Carolina, and so does Kansas and Duke and Syracuse. You know what I mean? Like, so does Michigan State and North Carolina, or Michigan State and Duke. And none of those are really rivalries. You know what I mean? I don't know. I think Kentucky fans kind of think their rivalry is with everybody, but except for maybe Indiana. But they, you know, at that level, everybody's kind of recruiting the same guys. Like, if you're getting top 10, top 15, top 25 guys, like, the programs there, with rare exception, like, the programs they're going to list in, like, their top 8 or whatever are all going to be pretty similar.
I like that Crane is still getting asked about Kentucky, the Kentucky series.
Well, you know, I mean, look, Calipari is a genius, and he texted Vital during the game last night telling him they would – have, I don't know if you guys were watching the broadcast or if you were there, but he texted Vital during the broadcast saying he would play at the Barclays Center for the Jimmy V Foundation.
Well played. Like,
yeah, during the broadcast. So, like, Vital brings it up and he's like, let's do it. And it's like, yeah, that's a great idea. But he's also a genius, because you can't criticize him and be like, why don't you want to play at Assembly Hall? You're a wimp. You know, like, you can't say that stuff because he wants to go play for cancer at the Barclays Center. But, you know, I thought Gary Parrish was dead on last night. I mean, I criticized Calipari for not wanting to play at Assembly Hall, and I kind of criticized Tom Crean for, you know, just kind of, like, I thought Indiana maybe didn't handle it as well as they could have. But if I'm Calipari, like, and I'm just doing what's, you know, and I don't care about the, you know, the idea of playing on campus, which, why would I? Like, he's right. Like, Gary Parrish wrote it. He's like, you wonder why John Calipari wanted nothing to do with Assembly Hall. It's like, because Indiana is good, and Assembly Hall is a really tough place to play when Indiana is good. So there's no point in going there. And getting no recruiting benefit out of it if you're just going to get beat every year, or, you know, if it's going to be this big marquee thing where Indiana recruits are going to go, and maybe recruits you're competing for are going to sit behind the Indiana bench and watch you, watch the, you know, Calipari's team get beat in this crazy raucous home environment. It just makes no sense for him to play that if he doesn't have to. And he doesn't have to. They're Kentucky. He can play whatever. So he can play Baylor and Jerry World every year if he wants to and make a ton more cash.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, maybe, you're right. Maybe Calipari really does have the upper hand here. But, you know, I just wish they do figure it out in some way, because it's just a shame that these two programs are, you know, at their peak right now. And the fact that they don't play this year, you know, you hope they play in the tournament, but you never know. It's just crazy. And, you know, the game against the Tar Heels last night had a ton of hype. And, you know, the day after, you know, electricity is still there, but it's not the same as last year. And you do wish that somehow those guys could figure it out, whether it's in New York or Bloomington or Lexington. Those guys got to play. Is that what you're thinking too, Greg?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, at this point, I just want to see those two play. I think this year would have been fun, because I don't think Kentucky is nearly as talented as they were the last few years, and the next year they have this insane recruiting class coming in. At the same time, I mean, I think Indiana would want to play them any year, in any place. I just, you know, I was at the Barclays Center last week for IU, Georgetown, Georgia, and I mean, it was a great environment, but it wasn't Assembly Hall, and I don't think it was anywhere near what Rupp Arena is. That's why I just think that it would be so much better if it was, you know, split 2-2 at both home arenas. I mean, yeah, that's just my take.
I don't disagree. I'm all in favor of as much campus basketball as possible. And I think that in general, that should be, you know, if I was the king of college basketball, which why I'm not already, I don't know.
You're getting close, though. You're getting close.
I'm doing my best every day. Someday we'll run that campaign. And then when I come into power, I'll give myself powers I said I'd never give myself, kind of like Egypt's president. But shout out to Mohamed Morsi. Anyway, I just think, like, you can't – I'd love for it to happen, and it's what college basketball is all about, is, like, crazy home atmospheres and environments and student sections. But if the last 2 years have taught us anything, it's that each specific school and each specific athletics program is going to look out for its own best interests. Rivalries, geography, nostalgia, tradition, be damned. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Maryland is in the Big Ten. Louisville's going to be, I mean, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
It's honestly just isn't going to matter. It doesn't matter. It isn't going to matter. And that's sort of a byproduct of it, is that, you know, it's not entirely related to conference realignment, but it's sort of a symptom of the same disease, is that it's about, you know, making money. It's about getting recruits to come to your school. And it's about looking as good as you possibly can on a yearly basis. And it doesn't do John Calipari really all that much good to go play at Assembly Hall, if, you know, especially because his fans, like, he held a poll about it, and then everyone was just like, man, we'd rather play Louisville or North Carolina. So,
you can say what you want about Calipari, but just like you said, he's a smart guy. I mean, he knows exactly what he's doing.
Yeah, he's a genius. He's the best.
He's the puppet master. He's pulling all the strings. All right, well, Eamon, we want to, you know, get really ahead of ourselves for a second here and talk about IU big picture the rest of the season. The next 2 weeks, pretty boring, just two games, and they play Butler December 15th. But if we could look ahead the rest of the year, I'm kind of interested in to hear how you think IU stacks up against Duke. You've got a little bit more of a national perspective than Greg and I. I think Duke's done just as much as IU to earn, you know, being number one in the country this year. It just so happens Indiana started as the preseason number one, so they get the nod. But if IU and Duke were to somehow meet down the line, how do you think that they'd match up?
I think it'd be a great game. I think that there's a lot of similarities in the matchups there. You look at Cody Zeller and Mason Plumlee, both big, pretty athletic guys who get up and down the floor. And I've always kind of been down on Mason Plumlee, like his freshman and sophomore years especially, because, oh, he's going to be a lottery pick after his freshman year. Oh, he's going to be a lottery pick after his sophomore year. And he just never got better. And last year he definitely improved. And then this year he looks like finally the off-season column that everyone seems to have written about him for the last 4 years finally seems to be true. Like, he is playing a lot better. He doesn't travel every third time when he catches the ball in the post. You know, there are definite signs of progress there. And he rebounds the ball really well. So I think that matchup between him and Cody Zeller is a really good one. And really funny because they're both Indiana products who are the, you know, members of three sibling basketball playing families. Kind of wild.
Yeah, you're right.
And I think the Ryan Kelly, Christian Watford matchup is, really good too. I mean, those guys, I think, are like basically mirror image players of each other. They're not particularly athletic. Right. They, which is maybe being a little bit kind, but they shoot the ball really well from the, they're 6'8" guys, but they shoot for the ball from the perimeter. And Ryan Kelly, especially, but I think Christian Watford, this is probably true too, probably a bit underrated as defenders and rebounders. I think Ryan Kelly at this point really underrated as a defender just because, you know, he looks like the kind of guy that I think a college basketball player would see and be like, I'm going to destroy this guy. And he's not bad. You know, he's not a bad defender at all. So I think that's, you know, kind of a dead on matchup. Duke's got some athletic bigs coming off the bench. Indiana will have some athletic bigs coming off the bench. And then really deep front courts. And I think Duke's probably got a bit of a size advantage in the front court, but Steph Curry's got an athletic guy. I mean, you can match up, you know, it depends who you want to put on him. You don't want him to shoot over the top of Jordan Hulls, but you can put maybe Yogi Ferrell on him. And you can match up those guys around the perimeter. So no, I think the two teams stack up pretty close, in terms of just the sheer matchups. And it would be a really, really interesting game because I don't think, I don't think Duke has the ceiling that Indiana does when they're whole and they're really humming. You know, I don't know that we're going to see, I mean, Ohio State's way better than North Carolina, losing a fair comparison. But we're not going to see Duke like straight up blitz Ohio State or too many teams in the top 15. They're just really solid, really good already. They know their roles, which is in a way similar to Indiana. I think Indiana has a higher ceiling as the season goes along. And Duke, as impressive as they've been thus far, is probably just a notch or so below that. But bottom line is, at the end of the season, anything can happen in the NCAA tournament. And I hate to say this, but Indiana could get upset in the second round by some particularly athletic mid-major team that we're not even thinking about right now. And Duke could pull a 2010 where you're like, really? That Duke team was winning the national title? So, you never know.
You never know.
Yeah, I mean, I like Duke a lot. They definitely could be number one. I just don't think... I mean, I know their schedule at this point is better in terms of their wins, but at this point, you know, Indiana just won by 30 points against UNC. They haven't done anything to necessarily give it up. So I think,
it's kind of
1-1A at this point.
You can't take a team off the board just because, you know, another team. I mean,
early in the year. I mean, I will say this, though. I think the big difference between Indiana and Duke is – Duke has very good starters, and then after that, I mean, who do they have? Thornton can't shoot. Jefferson's a freshman that's pretty hesitant. Hairston and Murphy. I mean, their starters all average double figures. They all average about 30-plus minutes a game, and they're very good. But I think if for some reason they got in foul trouble or had to go to the bench, they just don't have necessarily the depth that Indiana has.
No, that's probably true, yeah. I mean, but Coach K's teams have always sort of been like that. You know, he's not a guy who's going to throw 9 or 10 guys at you, especially as he gets down to mid-February and late February and early March. Like, he would prefer to have 6 dudes that know they're going to play, you know, about 30 minutes a game or whatever. He doesn't want to, be shape-shifting his lineups late in the season. So I think that can be a weakness for sure if you catch bad luck or foul trouble or you just, you know, bad luck with an injury, but it can also be a strength in that you got your guys, they all know their roles, you're very sort of well-oiled, and you don't have to worry a whole lot on a nightly basis about who's getting what minutes. It can go both ways. So, no, I mean, I think Indiana is, on the whole, probably a slightly more talented, better team, but, I mean, Duke's right up there, and look, by the end of the season, Kentucky's going to be there. I mean, they're talented enough that it'd be really silly to ride them. They're not last year's team. No team in the past like 15 years has been last year's team.
Right.
But they're talented enough that Calipari is going to get them there at the end of the year. And there are, Ohio State could very well beat Duke tonight. Ohio State's a good team. Like, year in, year out basis, they're good. Louisville would be silly to count out. I mean, when Gorgui Dieng gets back, great. That helps their defense. But even before then, they're still really, really deep. Ton of guards. They're going to press a lot of people. And Florida, like, from a sheer statistical standpoint thus far, has been, like, really, really good. And they get a lot of statistical love because they beat Wisconsin so handily, and Wisconsin's sort of an outlier in a lot of, like, ranking systems like Ken Palm and the right. BPI that we have on the ESPN side. I mean, but Florida's, like, number one in the BPI early in the season. And it's just because they've just been steamrolling people and pretty good teams at that. So, you know, there are some good teams out there. And Michigan, I mean.
I was just going to say Michigan, yeah.
Michigan, like, I was not entirely sold on Michigan before the season started. I don't know about you guys, but, like, I just thought, okay, well, this is a Beilein team. I've never seen John Beilein play, like, with a conventional sort of team where he's got just, like, straight-up conventional talented position guys at every position on the floor, where it's not a team that's just, like, little dudes like Zach Novak in the corner just chucking threes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But
thank God he's gone, by the way.
Yeah. He's a tough player. When they didn't have anybody, man, there were possessions where he used to guard Jared Sellinger in the post.
It was Zach Novak.
He was
a beast. I'm happy he's gone for IU's sake is what I mean.
Right.
Unfortunately, they still have Trey Burke, who's amazing.
Yeah, Trey Burke's really good, and Hardaway has just started the season just absolutely lights out. Like, I think the only player in the country who's really been all that much better on offense, and there might be two, Doug McDermott and Deshaun Thomas, basically had, like, a perfect offensive month. I don't know if you guys have seen, like, his numbers, but he had, like, 24 points and 7 rebounds on averages of, like, 55% from the field, 48% from three, and 94% from the free throw line.
Jeez. He's
basically making everything. But, Tim Hardaway Jr. just destroyed NC State, the middle of that NC State zone. Michigan looks, you know, really, and those freshmen will still come along. Like, Mitch McGarry, people sleep on because he sort of fell out of the top, you know, 20 in the rankings and recruiting this year. But he was, like, the top big man in the class, like, a year ago. So, there's a lot of good teams in the Big Ten and a lot of good teams around the country. And Indiana, I think, is a clear number one, but there's going to be a lot of challengers before the year is out.
Yeah, they could be that athletic team that gives IU some trouble in the Big Ten this year. Eamon, before we let you go and get back to bed rest and heavy amounts of tea, IU's got a pretty easy non-conference schedule the rest of the way now. The only challenge being Butler in 2 weeks in Indianapolis. Obviously, they knocked off the Tar Heels, so once again, they have to be taken seriously. Do you see them giving IU any trouble, or do you think it's full steam ahead for the Hoosiers heading to Big Ten play?
Well, I think that the talent deficit will do them in because I think Brad is, like, super smart. Everyone knows this, but it's reaffirmed a lot of the time when you see him coach against a team like North Carolina, where his team is clearly less talented, but the other team can't put anything together, and he knows if he's just like, okay, they're going to try and do this thing and this thing. Pretty much all the time, take those two things away, we're golden. And that's, it'd be a lot harder to do that than Indiana, obviously. And their offense, I think, still with Butler, that Kellen Dunham's good and Rodney Clark is good, but I'm not a huge fan of the set 8 side ball screens for Rodney Clark per possession and see how many shots he can put up offense. Like, I think they need to get a lot more. They need to be a lot more balanced. And I think as long as Indiana comes out ready to stop those two guys, their offense is basically the same offense as it was last year when it was not very good. I think Indiana will be fine. But, Butler's definitely better, and they'll defend. And Andrew Smith is not, he's not going to be a lottery pick, but he's going to guard Cody Zeller hard and physically, and he's going to, check him at the rim. So it's not going to be a walkover for Indiana by any means, but it'll be a very interesting game.
Andrew Smith is one of those guys that I feel like has been there for 20 years now.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny because I feel like it's gotten to the point where we say that about every senior now. If you're there for 4 years or if you're like a redshirt, I mean, like, look at Trevor Mbakwe. I think he's like his 15th year of college basketball at this point. So he's on the Jets settle schedule.
You're going to graduate? What's wrong with you? Why are you still here?
Exactly.
Well, hey, Eamon, good stuff, man. Thanks a lot for joining us today. Always good talking to you. And, you know, hopefully we'll have you on sometime later this year. And hopefully you're feeling better soon.
Thanks. I appreciate it. It's good to be here. And you guys enjoy the season. It should be a fun one for you.
Thanks. All right. Well, for Greg Rosenstein, I'm Matt Dollinger. That'll do it for this episode of Podcast on the Brink. Check back with Inside the Hall for more. Until then, thanks for listening and have a good one.